Thank you for watching Conscious Consumer Network. The live stream broadcast is free to view. You can pause and rewind live broadcasts to catch up, or view shows at a later date by accessing our free archives of all shows. Check out our broadcast guide to see what's on. You can show your support by donating to our network support fund. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or subscribe to the monthly newsletter for updates. We thank you for supporting free and independent media.
Well, hello, everyone. This is Joe Atwell. I'm here once again with my co-host, Jan Irvin. Sometimes people mispronounce his name as Irwin,
especially
because
Joe.
He is a winner, but it's Vin, Irvin. And this is Unspun. This is number 33. Show number 33, my how time flies. Soon we'll be up to show number 666. I just find that concept so funny, it cracks me up. Anyway, we're going to be talking about something that may seem frivolous, but as is the case so often, is actually related to some very serious and very damaging mind control devices that we have to put up with as citizens. We're going to be talking about UFOs. UFOs, of course, are not real. They are something that has been concocted as one of the fantasia reality that we have to put up with.
Joe, you've already got the audience upset now.
I've lost all the aliens. But anyway, what we want to do is really talk about sort of the origin of this concept of the UFO and where it comes from and who is in back of it. And then talk a little bit about, well, why would anyone want to create such a distraction for rational thought? Jan, I'm going to talk about the radio research project, because even though you can go further back than this, I just want to alert you to that's where I'm going to come in. But
sure. Let me just say.
I was just going to set the table for you. I was just going to say, right. But in fact, there's a more important link between MK Ultra and the whole mind control apparatus in the 50s that the UFO phenomena plugs into. And Jan has done quite a bit of research in that area. Jan, can you, if you were just going to take someone from the very beginning of that, yeah, let me
interrupt you for a second and just say that. We have a new Unspun show page up on Facebook that people can find from the Unspun link on the left on the Gnostic Media website. I've also posted on Facebook, but I just wanted to make sure that people were aware of that before we got started, because this is a live show. And so therefore, we can now take your questions and responses during the show, et cetera, right here on this page. So I just wanted to mention that. So go ahead and finish with your question there, Joe.
Well, I was just going to say, let's start with basically the how the UFO term came about. I mean, where was the beginning of that? And who are some of the people associated with that?
Well, one of the earliest people is H.G. Wells. I do believe there is a woman that stated that she was, about aliens and this sort of thing back in the 1820s or something like that. But there were other than H.G. Wells and this woman, I believe that's really where the idea came about. And of course, H.G. Wells, now we've done a lot of work on him in the past and talked a lot about him, but he wrote a famous book called War of the Worlds. And let me just pull him up here on the screen. And he wrote this book called War of the Worlds, and that became essentially the entire UFO phenomena that we have today. Now, H.G. Wells, as it turns out, we haven't had a chance yet, because we're only like a minute or two into the show, to talk about a Huxley yet. And so, as always, we've got a couple of Huxleys here. H.G. Wells was a student of Thomas Henry Huxley. And then H.G. Wells taught Aldous Huxley. And here's Aldous here, and he also knew Julian Huxley here. But H.G. Wells is also who came up with the idea of the H-bomb or the nuclear bomb. And he actually coined atomic bomb. He also wrote about the idea of magic mushrooms. I forget in which, the purple Peleus, and a lot of these other ideas. So, this Huxley and Wellsian lineage is just about always at the core of this stuff. And you had just mentioned the Princeton Radio Project. Well, we see that over here on the left in yellow. And I'm actually going to be doing a follow-up show with Dr. Hans Utter on this because he called me last week very excited to do another show because he's found a lot more research that shows exactly how the Princeton Radio Research Project is being played out today and basically bringing everything forward through our Music Mind Control Psychobiology series and the FM radio series into a whole new level. This might actually be a part five of this, but the Princeton Radio Research Project, they did it was basically a big confidential study of the influence of radio, and then basically they were behind the funding and creation or launch of the idea of UFOs through the War of the Worlds broadcast, and now I'm forgetting, was it, 1936 or 37, something like that.
38. Halloween.
Boy, you know, and it's already, you know, and I did all that research. It's already escaping me. But so this entire War of the Worlds project was done at Grover's Mill. And let me just pull that up. Grover's Mill was three and a half miles from Princeton University. And so this is Grover's Mill here. And if people want to learn all of the details of the Princeton Radio Research Project and how it relates to Orson Welles, I recommend they check out my episode with Dr. Hans Utter on that, which is episode number 239, War of the Worlds Prototype of Panic. And so I spent 2 weeks at Princeton going through all of the documentation and everything, looking at all of the history of this stuff, going through the MUD and Firestone libraries, and tons of good information at the MUD library there at Princeton on this specific project. And you can just go right in and read the documents. You can find confidential letters, et cetera, that they were, about their finances and things like that, their personal letters back and forth to each other. That's all there at Princeton University. And so this essentially was a study of how they could use media to implant ideas and et cetera into people's minds to make the public react a certain way to ideas. So it was really a study of how to use media to manipulate the public mind.
How to create panic.
How to create panic, exactly. But now they've taken it even further than that with the, as Hans will be presenting soon, with the new Pokemon app that everybody's following around. This is actually the merger now of everything that began at the Princeton Radio Research Project, culminating through the FM radio, through all of the media, through, you know, all of the computer technology, into this app, and it's now beginning the merger of physical reality with with the cyberspace essentially. And so I'm pretty excited to get in there and talk about that, but that's essentially the foundation of the Princeton Radio Research Project. Again, people who want to learn more about that, please study that episode that I did, episode 239, and you can also find it on YouTube, but I highly recommend watching that show because it's foundational to understanding how they're using media to manipulate the public.
Right, absolutely. And so the so UFOs really come into the public consciousness, to use an expression, with this War of the Worlds. And so we really need to study the Radio Research Project. What stands out immediately is that it was funded by the Rockefellers. So this was a Rockefeller funded project, which had as its purpose, its stated purpose basically was to conduct psychological tests and research into the effect that media has upon the public. And this wasn't the first. The War of the Worlds was actually the second of the kind of fake panic driving media events. The first one was called Air Raid. And I think it was a fake air raid that was put on by the same group of people. But
right. I have it on screen here, and it was okay. written by Archibald MacLeish,
right,
who ironically was the librarian for the U.S. Library of Congress, and working also influenced the creation of UNESCO. Now, Joe, how many minutes has it been since we brought up a Huxley?
Yeah, too many.
Wells and Huxley were behind the creation of UNESCO there. So, but yeah, Archibald MacLeish wrote Air Raid, and then that was also done by the Princeton Radio Project the week before War of the Worlds. So it was another test that they were doing.
Right, and you can see that these are not, you know, it's not a radio serial. I mean, this isn't, you know, like scare the public every week. These were done specifically for the purpose of creating panic, studying panic, studying to what extent the public would see things that were completely absurd as real just because the authoritative media told them they were real. So this was what was getting studied, really, was exactly how gullible we are, exactly how easy panic is to create. And these two shows gave a lot of data. Now, I wanted to mention that when you look at this project, you have to look at the individuals involved, because many of them actually go on to other kinds of research. The director, Paul Lazarfield, was connected into what was called the American Jewish Committee, which then was basically went on to become part of the Macy Conference. You also had the infamous Theodore Adorno as one of the individuals there. Now, Adorno was the individual who produced the Authoritarian Personality, which is available. You can use the Jan's brain software to look at this.
Actually, maybe I don't have that in there. So you know what I need to do is, while you're talking about that, I will connect him to the AJC.
Right, and it's important to do that, because what you'll see is that they were studying, you know, the human psychic as well. And if you look at the detail of psychological study that the AJC, the American Jewish Committee, was doing, this psychological research goes straight into the Macy Conference concepts, which are studied, and then on into MKUltra. I know, you know, oftentimes when we point this out, people will rile up and hurl this concept of anti-Semitism at us, but actually we're not really trying to come up with some kind of general racial understanding here or claim position. We're trying to do is understand the connections between the facts. And the fact is that the Authoritarian Personality wanted to create mass scale psychological control over Gentiles, so that to basically to defend Jewish people, and that this mass scale psychological concept that they were of techniques and development of these skills is related directly, because the same individuals then went on and became part of MKUltra and became part of the MKUltra project. So when you look now back at this this program, the Radio Research Project, and you see that UFOs were produced by it, right? And you see Odarno's name and Paul Lazarfield. And incidentally, these aren't the only people. I believe Frank Stanton, who was also in this project, goes on and becomes the president of CBS, right? So
right, exactly.
You have really influential media people inside this project. You have the American Jewish Committee, you have MK Ultra, and you also have the Tavistock. Gordon Allport, who was worked with Lazarfield, was one of the Tavistock's leading representative in the United States. So you've got just too many points of connection with military intelligence and what becomes the destructive MK Ultra project, and of course, which then spreads out into these vast areas of social control that we have to put up with today. So we need to get all of this stuff understood. And Jan, getting back to UFOs, so they bring out the concept of the UFOs, but then you started in the 50s, you start having UFO both sightings and also media showing.
Well what I want to do right before we jump into that is, I want to talk about another one of everybody's favorite heroes, Aleister Crowley.
Wow. The Crowley man. What's he got to do with all this?
Well, surprisingly, and now I was just trying to remember the name, but he conjured this. I'm just going to have to share the screen again. He conjured this alien god guy, Lamb, I think is what it is. He conjured this guy, and Jack Parsons, who happens to be the founder, creator of Jet Propulsion Laboratories, who is a heavy supporter of Crowley. Let's just pull Jack Parsons up. He would actually put the hymn to Pan on each of his rockets when they were launched. And then he was also into this Babylon Working, and Babylon Working has some interesting things in it, magic ceremonies and rituals with Jack Parsons, Scientology founder L. Ron Hubbard, and the project was based on ideas by Aleister Crowley. So Crowley's alien god Lamb that we just had up there on the screen is apparently, and thanks to Steve Outram for discovering this, this is apparently the foundation, the origins of gray aliens. And we'll come back around to this in a bit, but all of this stuff also comes up around the time that space travel and rocketry and all of this stuff is being developed.
Do you know if Crowley actually drew that picture?
He may have drawn that, very possible. I did not look that up. But, so this essentially, and we'll come back around to this, but this becomes the foundation of the gray alien concept. So whenever you see the New Agers like Whitley Strieber or who's another one? There's another good one. Miriam Bluestar catching something like that. She paints herself looking like one of these. This is all, based on Crowley stuff. Now, so the Crowley idea of this god Lamb, then apparently, now I just mentioned that Jack Parsons was at that magical ritual with a guy by the name of L. Ron Hubbard. Now, L. Ron Hubbard happens to be the founder of a religion called Scientology, and the Scientology's religion on the eighth whatever is this god Xenu.
Right.
And so, this is another, gray alien, essentially. So here we have a cabal of Aleister Crowley, Jack Parsons, and L. Ron Hubbard.
And they're all pumping little green men.
Yeah, creating little green men and pumping that out there. So this is basically the next stage after War of the Worlds, after the Princeton Radio Research Project, after H.G. Wells writing War of the Worlds in the 1890s, I think, or late 1880s, I forget. But this folds out into society, and that's the origins of it. Now, as far as I've been able to track it down. Now, you had asked about the alien abduction issue. Now, the alien abduction issue was started by a guy by the name of John G. Fuller. Now, John G. Fuller is an interesting man within a lot of this research, but he wrote a book called The Interrupted Journey. And this book is the first book to write about alien abductions and the alien abduction, supposed alien abduction of Betty and Barney Hill. Now, in my article that, and you and I did a show on it a couple weeks ago, my article, Spies in Academic Clothing, the first section of that article breaks down another book by John G. Fuller. Let me just get to it here, called The Day of St. Anthony's Fire. Now, as it turns out, Fuller went to Pont-Saint-Esprit, France, and this is my article, Spies in Academic Clothing, but he goes to Pont-Saint-Esprit, France, to do this investigation on the supposed outbreak, whatever you want to call it, the ergot outbreak that happened in Pont-Saint-Esprit, France, and now I'm forgetting that too. It's all in this article. But anyway, he goes over there to do the actual research on that, and then just before he gets to France, or while he's getting to Pont-Saint-Esprit, they just coincidentally happen to have all of these UFO sightings in France. Now, earlier you mentioned, Frank Stanton and CBS Radio. Well, Frank Stanton CBS Television happened to be who John G. Fuller also worked for. So let me just pull up Fuller here in the database. And so Fuller is working for CBS Radio. And then we know that he was an MKUltra researcher because he wrote another book called Arrigo, that which I discuss in the Spies in Academic Clothing article also, that takes him down to, what was it, Argentina, I think, with somewhere in South America, with Andrea Puhrich to cover this whole doctor with the rusty knife thing like that, and they fake all of these cures that they're doing. But Dr. Andrea Puhrich just so happens that he was working with the Stanford Research Institute, working with the CIA, working directly with Aldous Huxley, working with the Esalen Institute. Dr. Andrea Puhrich, he headed the Council of Nine, and he also promoted the infamous Spoonbender CIA agent and Mossad agent, Uri Geller. Now, Red Ice Radio did an interview with Uri Geller a year or two ago where he admitted that he was an agent the whole time. But, they're using sleight of hand and trickery. I don't believe that he was actually really doing this stuff with his mind. James Randi, whom I hate to cite because he's caught up in NAMBLA and he's caught up in all of these other scandals. The supposed debunker, he's caught up in the False Memory Syndrome Foundation, which is another CIA front. So it's two CIA agents just being pitted against each other. But he exposes the tricks that Uri Geller uses. But this is who Dr. Andrea Puhrich is, one of the CIA's and Army's. He was working at the Chemical Center, the Army Chemical Center at Edgewood, Maryland. Yeah, and in fact, there is Dr. Alexander Shulgin, whom you were having trouble pronouncing his name last week. And, so we get Operation Often Chickwit and some others out of this same center here. But we know for a fact that Puhrich and John G. Fuller were working together. And we know for a fact that John G. Fuller wrote this book, The Interrupted Journey, you know, this book here, The Interrupted Journey, on Betty and Barney Hill, which started the entire alien abduction meme or notion in society. So then we see all of these people talking about this. And so...
Hey, Jan, I have a question. Why would they, introduce the UFO and the little green men into our culture? What was their purpose for this?
Well, I had that saved kind of for last. In my opinion, it's what I call a double rap, and which I think is exposed in Fuller's books, is that, you know, and he talks about the UFO thing being promoted in part by, if I can find the name here, the Brookings Institution, which is underneath the Tavistock Institute. And what I think the purpose is, one, to create fear, because as he talks about, you know, people are going to be so worried about an alien invasion, they'll give up their rights for anything and this kind of stuff. But what I think also is that what the CIA and U.S. Air Force have done is created the idea and put agents out there to say that the CIA, or especially the Air Force, is withholding information about UFOs and aliens, etc. So I think what they're doing is a double rap to cover up probably JPL and Jack Parsons' own research into this stuff. And then they're launching all of these rockets, but then the army can then control the entire conversation, such as with the Disclosure Project and Mark Greer and the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, this kind of stuff. They can control this whole idea. So essentially what a double rap is the Air Force would put out the idea of someone denying or someone claiming that the Air Force has you know what, I'm going to use a different analogy that might be a little bit easier, because this analogy comes to me from Miles Mathis. He didn't give me the idea, but his article on John Lennon actually being Mark Stacer gives me the idea. So Miles Mathis's argument is that John Lennon is not dead, and I think he's got a really solid argument, in my opinion, especially when you look at the veins in the hands and everything, that John Lennon is not dead, but is actually a lookalike by the name of Mark Stacer, who plays John Lennon. So it's John Lennon playing Mark Stacer playing John Lennon. So that is a double wrap. So they wrap a lie inside of another lie. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I think, and I do think that that is part of what we're experiencing. But I also think that there's something that's even simpler. And okay. That is, which is just that to the extent that they can introduce irrational beliefs, they are able to create mental areas for control, because when they take you away from your senses, whenever they can create any break in someone's capacity to reason, which comes through the experience of your senses, whenever they can do that, then they are able to basically be one more degree closer to controlling the mind of the individual. And just as an example, you know, you have you know, like some event that they create as a media event, like the killing of bin Laden, and then you know,
which,
no evidence.
Which time, the 9th or yeah, the 11th? Right. No, yeah.
But my point is that, okay, so then a movie comes out, and the movie is just vivid. And this friend of mine who went to it said at the end of it, everyone just stood there, or, you know, was quiet and silent. They were just overwhelmed by the power of the video. So you can see that once you're able to get any concept that is not not directly connected into the senses, then you're much easier than to use that area of understanding or misunderstanding of reality as a point where they can basically fit in other concepts related to it to expand out until you're just living in a dream world. And an example of this, of course, is Christianity, which, you know, once the oligarch is able to get you to believe in Jesus, then your ability to fend off his attempts to control your work product are greatly diminished, because you can't rebel against someone who is Jesus's representative. You see, once someone takes on the mantle of a religious person, then you are basically incapable of defending yourself. You're going, okay, well, since Jesus's representative wants me to give up my children and the food and be here as a slave, I guess I have to do it. No rebellion.
Now, well, they can just bring in the UFO and the alien and say, this is the new God.
Exactly. And so that's why I think that they're always probing. And this was just the result of the Princeton radio science, you know, which, and if you just look at that project closely, you can see what they're doing is psychological study. This isn't, you know, fun radio. This isn't Orson Welles trying to entertain. That is absolute nonsense. Look at the history of the and the documentation concerning the fact that this was a psychological experiment, right?
So, absolutely. I've shown ample documentation for that in the World War of the Worlds episode 239.
Right, and so this is what we're putting up with. Is we're putting up with people who are trying to introduce the most zany concepts imaginable as reality. They're always testing us, and they're basically just seeing where it is in the points of current culture that they can expand out, you know. And of course, this is related, as we've talked about many times, to music, to theater, you know, to dance, you know, Vito Pelecas and the freak dancing. So the concepts that moved culture in the direction the oligarchs want have all come out of study. And this is a point of weakness, in fact, because this is a place where researchers can go in and we can find out that what was presented as entertainment, we can demonstrate, right? I mean, many times, you know, it's like, you know, you can't find the pay requisition like we did with the Gordon Wasson material, you know, where we actually have the pay requisition. This proves MKUltra was real. This proves it was working against society. But because it is a secret society, it's hard to always get that information. But we can get analytic fingerprints. And that's why the whole UFO thing is really something that I hope every single citizen studies closely, because it doesn't stand up to scrutiny. It fits right into psychological research that is being done on us and is still having basically a very damaging effect on our society, because there are so many people who actually believe in extraterrestrials. I mean, just think of how many people have suffered with this ludicrous piece of fantasy.
And not one of them has ever shown me any evidence.
There isn't any.
Of course not.
What there is there's deluded people who have been, you know, and sadly they've been taken into this fictional world. And so all of the fantasy basically needs to be studied carefully. Walt Disney, of course, is, you know, we'll, someday I guess, maybe I'm not even sure, remember, we've done so many shows, maybe we actually have talked on it, but there's someone who comes from this world who is there to damage us. And what does he do? Well, he takes us into Fantasia. He takes us into Mickey Mouse, you know, into all of these cartoons.
Alice in Wonderland, mushrooms,
you know, and right, Tinkerbell, you know, the Pinocchio, which is, all of these incidentally are Freemason, you know, literatures. You know, there's no way to get around that. Davy Crockett, Mark Twain, all of the people that Disney represents are part of this, the Freemason side of this, which ends up so vivid in MKUltra. But anyway, so that's why, you know, Jan did really, really good research. I mean, just extraordinarily good research into the radio project. And so that's available on his site, and I would highly recommend that people familiarize themselves with how obvious a fraud the whole UFO thing is, because it's there to hurt us. We can resist it and, in fact, perhaps use it to our advantage, because it becomes, you know, a fingerprint. And I brought this up last week, Jan, that you know, they have their plans, they execute their plans, they damage us, right? But once we understand their plan, then we can use that as our tool. It becomes something that the citizen can use against the oligarch.
And they become impotent as well.
And they become impotent. But because sometimes, for example, with MKUltra, they fail to keep the secrecy intact, then that creates an opportunity for us. That creates an opportunity for the citizen, and we can't ever let it fail, because we need to take advantage of every one of the fingerprints we can come up with, because we need to get more people to be aware of what's going on. This is absolutely critical. You know, we how do you do that? How do you get people out of their, you know, the everyday life with the everyday concept of reality, which is so damaging to them and so fake? Well, you need to show them some really good, clear evidence. And this is why when you get evidence like Jan has come up with in terms of the background of the Princeton Radio Project, and then you can plug this right into the, you know, the War of the Worlds episode, which then goes on and becomes the basis for all of this UFO nonsense. Well, folks, we've got a really, really strong piece of evidence here, something that we can use as our weapon. War of the Worlds, the Princeton Radio Project, the UFOs that comes out of all these MKUltra people that Jan was citing. Okay, well, that was the damage phase of it. That was the damage. It hurt us. It did. You know, it's part of how we basically lost or had a diminished capacity, you know, for logic. All right. Well, now comes our turn. Right. Now we're able to look at what they've done. We're able to analyze it. We can show people how obviously fake the whole UFO project was. And then people can wonder, well, why did they do it? You see, and that's why I pose the question, Jan, is because I want everyone who is familiar with this to always ask that question. Why did they do it? Because it can be shown that they did is to hurt us, right? They are in operation against us. They sure are in operation. Okay, so that's all. That's what I'm just trying to get at with this. This is a great opportunity. The UFO thing is so fake, it's so ludicrous, that hopefully other researchers and other just ordinary citizens can pick up the mantle and go, you know what, no more. We're sick of this. We're going to use it against the oligarchs. We're going to expose what they've done to us.
Now what I want to do is bring this is a good point to bring the discussion forward to more modern times. And we should probably start out with Stanley Kubrick, Arthur C. Clarke's 2001 Space Odyssey that starts off with the black megalith cobblestone there and then ends with this alien megalithic stone and regresses him back to a child or whatever and absorbs, you know, whatever. But this perpetuates the alien UFO theme, and it has been suggested that the Apollo moon missions only went into outer orbit and that it was primarily Kubrick who created a lot of the sound video set for NASA, et cetera, to film a lot of that. And then, you know, so it goes from Kubrick, and then we have the next stage of it that comes out, which is the reptilian aliens. And the reptilian aliens come from two guys. One is a phony Sumerian scholar by the name of Zachariah Sitchin. Now, he had a bachelor's degree, I believe, in Sumerian, but it was very entry level. And I do know a Sumerian expert, Anna Partington, who's one of the last few Sumerian experts in the world. And they keep his books around for, as she put it, for shits and giggles. But from there, this idea of the reptilian alien gets picked up by theosophist David Icke, or David Icke, however people want to pronounce it. And, you know, David Icke promotes the likes of Annie Besant and people like that. So he, you know, he's out there.
Be careful of that guy. Yeah, be careful, because it is odd, isn't it? You know, this whole lizard thing.
Well,
is,
I think it's another 6633, Joe, where there, you know, he puts out valid information. I saw his lecture, you know, and this is all my opinion, just to be clear. I'm not slandering you there, David. But I saw his lecture in Santa Monica about 4 or 5 years ago. And I mean, he had about 70% good information. And then he goes into moon space stations and lizards and stuff. And, you know, he does a bait and switch. He gives you good information. And then when he should give you solutions, he gives you something like lizards and moon space stations. So this is essentially where the whole lizard thing comes from. It's from Zachariah Sitchin. And there's a really good website on Zachariah Sitchin that debunks all of his stuff called SitchinIsWrong.com, and it's very scholarly, and this guy really goes through it and does a good job of breaking, you know, Sitchin's so-called work apart. And, you know, so again, it's just a new level of promotion of this theme. Now, to Dave Emery's credit, 2 decades ago, he did a lecture about these people eventually will use UFOs to come down and take over society to bring out the new religion. And I thought it was ridiculous at the time, but 20 years on and in hindsight and looking at all of the research and everything, it's pretty obvious that that's what is
it's a possibility. There's no question.
You know, and I think at least what they're doing, Joe, is they're creating different strategies that they can use for, you know, just in case.
Exactly. Whichever
plan
one
A, plan B, plan C. Yeah.
Right. I wanted to, you mentioned the Space Odyssey and Clark's film, and how Kubrick may have, it was Clark's story that Kubrick made into the movie.
Sure.
And I just wanted to point out a little piece of oligarchic symbolism that is visible at the very beginning of that, so that the next time the audience sees the film, they can understand what they're looking at. At the beginning of the film, you have 2 groups of apes in conflict, and then suddenly the obelisk appears. One group is influenced by the obelisk. It basically is directly next to them. And then following that, they go and determine how to get weapons, right? They actually get their bones.
And then
with the bones,
they
can kill the other apes. Well, this is the pleasant fantasy that the oligarchs have concerning humanity in general. This is the Freemason, the architect.
The psychopath
right, exactly.
Mentality,
and so they,
versus everybody else.
They look, you know, we've created the technology, and so that's why we are going to basically slaughter everyone else and be dominant. And it's the obelisk represents, you know, their connection to God, which gives them the capacity to develop technology. I mean, this is just... It would be funny if it wasn't so completely catastrophic for humanity. But I assure you, and I assure everyone who is listening to me, that if you look at the opening of the 2001 and think about it, that's exactly what you're looking at.
Yeah, I would agree with that, I would say. So what we should probably do is go from, go into the History Channel, and the History Channel, you know, comes across as this authoritative source. They're the History Channel. They can't be lying.
Right. Yeah.
But the History Channel is one of the worst propaganda channels out there, and they've contacted me a number of times to use my work and citations. They may have even invited me to interview for a show. And no matter what they approach me for, I have always rejected the History Channel's offers because their reputation is just so awful. But the History Channel really came out heavily promoting the ancient alien theme, along with Zachariah Sitchin and Eric von Daniken and another guy who was associated with somebody else we've covered a lot, a guy by the name of Graham Hancock, who was associated with the guy we covered last week by the name of Terrence McKenna, right?
So it's just this incredible cesspool of social connections between the sophists and the mind controllers, and everyone has this bizarre cover story of some extraordinary personality, which, of course, when you pick at it a little bit, just disintegrates, and all that you're left with is an intel agent.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, so then we have this whole ancient aliens thing where they're going into, you know, old Christian artwork or any kind of artwork and distorting it and creating whatever story they can to, you know, to go with it. So you'll see, like, you know, something going through the sky. It could be a star. It could be them having a drug-induced experience on mushrooms or whatever, but they automatically leap to, this is UFOs, this has got to be UFOs, so, you know, and then this is their evidence of proof of all of these ancient aliens. So, you know, and there's a guy, Chris, I'm forgetting his last name right now, but he did a really good debunking of ancient aliens. So, you know, he and I have butted heads on John Allegra's work when he distorted the work, but he did an excellent YouTube video called, I think it's just called Debunking Ancient Aliens. So I definitely recommend people checking that out. And he goes through and exposes all the History Channel stuff and all of these guys and how they're tied together. But what's missing is, you know, the central theme of how these people are so just, you know, closely knit tied together. And so we have, you know, the same groups of people popping up with the Council of Nine and Andrea Puhrich and Aldous Huxley and Orson Welles and H.G. Wells and, you know, all the Princeton Radio Research Project, all of the same typical people. There's, you know, some others over here, Richard Dolan, Richard Doty, but all of the same people are associated with most of these guys in the background. It doesn't take typically, and I haven't gone into some of their backgrounds like Eric von Daniken, you know, some of these I need to flush out even more and, you know, get their connections. And I have no doubt that it's going to connect in even deeper when I go into that. And then, you know, more modernly, it continues on from there. And we talked about the gray alien idea earlier. And then comes in the communion story by Whitley Strieber, again promoting the ancient alien theme, right? And so, you know, so it goes from H.G. Wells, War of the Worlds, you know, it goes from this and then to this. Sorry, it's jumping around. And then to this here. And in the interim, we get this stuff. So this is the essential progression that we're seeing of this, you know, Esalen CIA Air Force connected. There's probably ONI and you know, other groups, probably MI6 and others in there too, with the, you know, and in fact, that's probably a good point to bring in the crop circles, right? Because all of that going on in the UK, that's probably MI6 doing all that. I'd almost guarantee it. But then they can promote all these UFO themes and propagate them out to the public. So the next evolutionary stage of this UFO theme is this essentially, and this is another version of Lamb basically, but it's essentially the version of the self-transforming machine elves by none other than Terrence McKenna himself. And Terrence McKenna influenced Graham Hancock, and Terrence McKenna promoted the UFO mushroom theory, also promoted by, you know, that we talked about last week, in fact, that Dennis McKenna and Joe Rogan and these others trying to cover up, apparently, in my opinion, in their attempt to cover up the Terrence McKenna fiasco. You know, they're trying to make it look like McKenna was recruited by UFOs. And then, you know, McKenna, if I recall correctly, actually said he was against UFOs and cited Carl G. Jung's book, Flying Saucers, on that. But, you know, so this whole thing is, it becomes the origins of it. And then we're still not done with the progression, though, because as we talked about last week, you know, at the beginning of the show last week, we showed a video clip that was a slanderous attack by Dennis McKenna on me at the Free Your Mind conference. And in 2011, when I was at the Free Your Mind conference, at the conference, one of the speakers was a guy by the name of Alfred Lamont Weber. And Alfred Lamont Weber, as it turns out, you may or may not be surprised at this point, worked with SRI, the Stanford Research Institute. He's a JD or Juris Doctor. He graduated Yale, and he's also a professor of economics at Yale. And he is also, Joe, ironically, a Fulbright scholar. So, you know, people who are, you know, upset that I would talk about him, you know, recognize that he's a Fulbright scholar, and you can't talk about exposing Fulbright scholars in Australia and not talk about, you know, exposing Fulbright scholars in the U.S. That just doesn't make any sense. So, you know, and when I was at the Free Your Mind conference, his lecture was about, you know, UFOs that are so tiny for the eye to see. They come into our atmosphere and they become full-size UFOs, go down to the ocean, scoop up all the water, and then pop back into tiny little things and disappear into another dimension or fly off into space or whatever.
Well, wow, that they must have been the guys that hired Terrence McKenna.
Right, well, you know.
That's why no one knew about it, because they were so tiny.
Well, you know, that's maybe, you know, maybe that's possible.
Maybe they were working with the mushrooms to hire him.
That's, you know, maybe you're right, Joe, but
that makes perfect sense.
If you
I'm glad that these guys are bringing out concepts to cover their ass that are so believable, right? Like, he's really, you know, I'm still upset about that event last week where you played the tape and Dennis McKenna was saying that he was talking bad about you, and with the idea that, well, it's just obvious that he was talking about that the mushrooms hired him, right?
Sure. You know, because when somebody is recruited and, you know, on the run by the FBI, that's, you know, the first thing you think is that, oh, yeah, you know, he's recruited by
mushrooms. Of course, they're so sophisticated, those mushrooms. They actually, for a period of time, put you into deep background. I mean, that was just about the stupidest. I mean, that was like literally the dog ate my homework kind of approach that I've almost never even imagined in the intel world.
And not only that, but if you can imagine this, Joe, Dennis McKenna has multiple PhDs. I mean, at least one, but as far as I remember, he had two or three PhDs. So yeah, this, yeah. You know, I mean, this is the kind of, I mean, you know, bumbling buffoonery that is apparently overtaken the PhD system.
You know, I've been mentioning for a while that one of the areas that researchers need to plug into is all of their explanations as to how the cover stories got started and how they make their social connections. It's like, you know, I've mentioned that Stuart Brand's story of how he ends up with Kesey is preposterous, and this is an area that people can dig into, because the reason why these areas are weak is that they are, of course, invented. And so when you tell a lie, it's more difficult to actually structure it to, you know, to fit into reality. And sometimes you get things like Brand's story about how he meets Kesey, or McKenna's story about how he then, you know, plugs into the whole psychedelic world, right? In that case, it's in McKenna's case, it's a very broad connection. He's saying, well, you know, gee, how did I actually get into this, right? You know, promotion of psychedelic drugs. Well, you know, the mushrooms hired me. You know, so these are the points where researchers can find opportunity. We were very lucky with Gordon Wasson to actually find the pay requisitions. We were very lucky with Gregory Bateson, you know, to find the whole documentation of the Native Revival Plan. But those were rare. This is a secret society. They're very good at covering their tracks. But where they have to interact with the public and come up with a storyline as to how they got together, why they were doing what they were doing. You know, another one of the absurdities was Al Hubbard in the LSD, the MKUltra reunion party, where Hubbard, when they asked him point blank, why are you doing this? And Hubbard goes, I don't know. And then Larry, of course, you know, backtracks seriously, trying to give Hubbard some cover. But these are the areas. These are always areas that can be burrowed into, is how did they come to know each other? How did a group with all these strange, exotic points of view and understanding, belief about the world, how did you come together? You know, sometimes people do, of these like-mindedness, they do find themselves. But because they're wise,
themselves at the CIA and SRI, apparently.
Right, exactly, because they're wise. Their cover stories have the opportunity to sometimes expose them, like we have with right. McKenna, with Stuart sure. Brand,
now,
with
let me. Robert. Now let me just you know, finish reading this. I just found it on Alfred Lamont Weber, and this was originally on Wikipedia, and I just tried to pull up his Wikipedia page, which is no longer there apparently, maybe because I had called him out for this stuff before, and maybe he had it removed, I'm not sure, but it says Alfred's 1974 book, The Age of Cataclysm, by Putnam and Sons, Berkeley Medallion, there's another connection, integrates earth sciences and psychic remote viewing of Edgar Cayce of global coastal event and expresses a catastrophic timeline for the earth. Alfred is the chairman for the Mars Anomaly Research Society, that's M-A-R-S, Mars, educating about life on Mars. A graduate of Yale University, Yale Law School, and Fulbright Scholar, Alfred has taught economics at Yale University and constitutional law at the University of Texas. Alfred was general counsel to the New York City Environmental Protection Administration, a futurist at Stanford Research Institute, where directed the proposed 1977 Carter White House extraterrestrial communication study.
just dirty as hell. I mean, think about...
In your opinion, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, sorry, in my opinion. I can only give my opinion. That reminds me of like Thetford and Schumann with...
Schuckman, you know, right.
Their background in cognitive psychology... all of their academic connections, and then they also have this channeling of Jesus Christ.
Because that's how
preposterous a Fulbright scholar, a Yale attorney, and then he's interested in extraterrestrial. That's just makes no sense. That's completely out of normal human pattern. And you see, once again, it's the cover story where the weaknesses pop up.
Sure. Now there is one more person. We got about a minute and a half left here. There is one more person that I would like to bring up who is also a speaker at the Free Your Mind Conference. She was there in 2011 when I spoke, when Alfred Lamont Weber was there, and she's been there at preceding ones from that. But and that would be Laura Eisenhower. Now, Laura Eisenhower, of course, is the president the granddaughter of President Dwight Eisenhower. And Laura Eisenhower, again, promoting the whole UFO thing and everything. And Laura Eisenhower, Dwight Eisenhower actually ran the 10 or 12 think tank, now I'm forgetting, that covered all of this stuff. And so, you know, her own grandfather helped to create the very ideas that she is then out promoting. So it's just like the, excuse me, the sons and daughters of Intel, you know, and, right, and we only have a few seconds left. So.
Yeah. Well, there it is. So UFOs, folks, you know, be very suspicious of not just of whether or not they exist, but why the concepts exist in our media.
Sure.
And
try Joe, you better to help give out your website.
Okay. Hey, CaesarsMessiah.com. Buy Caesar's Messiah and Shakespeare's Secret Messiah. You'll get a good understanding of our background. Jan, what about your books and your website?
GnosticMedia.com. You can get everything there. Please support the show. Also support CCN. Make a donation. And thank you so much, everyone.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Conscious Consumer Network was designed to create a live broadcast TV network for free and independent media and has been live on the air since the 1st of January 2015. CCN gets millions of minutes watched every month and is viewed in over 140 countries, having produced around 1,400 shows and counting.
And you know, it's very hard to get on mainstream media, of course, the corporate media that's getting tighter and more monopolized and more restrictive for any outside information.
The live broadcasts are free to view and all shows are archived in high definition on YouTube. CCN plays host to a stellar team of broadcasters and producers, all of whom rely on the network to get their message and information out to the world. CCN has continued to evolve, constantly seeking to create greater media usage and opportunities for both broadcasters and viewers, including supporting projects such as the newly launched ConsciousCommunities.org. A brand new social media platform that is free to use and has been created for those dedicated to the pursuit of freedom, justice, peace, and sustainability to come together and co-create the solutions to a better world. Due to the constant heavy usage, we are in need of replenishing and replacing of key hardware and infrastructural wear and tear. This includes the fixing and replacing of parts of the live broadcast equipment system, as well as increasing storage capacities for content and projects. Without this, CCN and its affiliate projects will simply not be able to continue. Conscious Consumer Network is a publicly funded project, and it is up to you all to keep CCN on the air.